Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Stunt Trek episode number 8 with yours truly, Uncle Jim, and the Leslie Hoffman. How you doing tonight, Leslie?
I'm doing fine. We've been having interesting weather up in Saranac Lake today. I think it's hail, snowed, and rain today.
You know, I was on my way over from Rutland to Whitehall for a Star Trek Attack Wing game. And the same thing, it couldn't make up his mind. Is it going to snow? Is it going to rain? Are we going to have hail? Is it going to be windy? And it did everything. It couldn't make up his mind, so it did everything. But it's all gone
right
now.
Well, actually, you brought that other thing up, is that I have this really furry Pekingese, and I took him out, and and the wind almost took him across the yard. Poor little baby.
It was very windy. Very windy. So we have a great show planned for you guys tonight. We're going to be talking about conventions. Leslie's attended many. I've attended many. I've never attended a convention as an invited guest like the Leslie Hoffman has. So a lot of my stories are from a fan's perspective, but Leslie has two sides of the same coin. She can talk about conventions as a fan and conventions as a guest. So we're going to talk about conventions. If you have any convention stories that you'd like to share with us, give us a call at 646-668-2433. That's 646-668-2433. And as usual, out of the kindness of Leslie's heart, the first fan that gives us a call and tells us a little story or asks a question about convention, Leslie will send you a 4x6 autograph, and you get to pick whether you want B'Elanna Torres or Freddy Krueger. When you call, we'll get you the details. But 646-668-2433 is the number. We have a special guest in the studio with us live right now. We have one of my co-hosts from Trek Talkin', and of course, I'm talking about none other than the awesomeness of Charles. How you doing tonight, Charles?
I'm doing good.
And how's the weather out in Vegas?
So far, mild. We're a little cloudy today, but we've been seeing signs of spring lately, which have been nice.
It's kind of parallel to conventions, but now how long has the Star Trek experience been gone now?
I don't remember exactly.
Wow.
Many years. It's been quite.
Yeah.
I mean, it's probably close to 10. I think it's been 10 years. I think they had their anniversary. I think it's been close 10 years now. But it's interesting because I'm part of the USS Las Vegas Star Trek Club. And our Captain Admiral started the club there at the experience.
Oh.
They actually created our club, and they worked. Both of them actually worked at the experience.
I wonder why they never closed. I know I went there once. I think I was there a second time. And I just thought that was a nice thing for people that couldn't get on the Paramount lot, that they sort of got an idea of what it was for Star Trek. And I love the timeline. When you were waiting in that beginning line, there was like pictures along the wall that I think were in sort of a chronological order, if I remember correctly.
And
yeah,
they
were showing aliens or something like that.
Yeah. In fact,
we have our
first caller
of the night, Leslie. Can you believe that?
Oh, I'm sorry.
Say that again. We have a fan on the line that wants to talk to you.
Oh, okay.
To the one and only, the Leslie Hoffman. So let's see who we got on the line. Good evening.
Hey.
Thank you for calling Stunt Trek. What's your name and where are you calling us from tonight?
This is Brandon Coles from Brownsville, Kentucky.
Hey, how you doing tonight?
Good.
We're glad that you called. Did you have a question you wanted to ask Leslie?
What's your favorite stunt you've done?
Well, are you talking about Star Trek or stunt in general?
Just in your career.
That's always a hard question to ask because favorite and most dangerous aren't necessarily the same. I would say the most dangerous stunt I did was in a movie called 1941, where I was in a motorcycle sidecar, and this John Belushi pulls the pin from the sidecar, and we go up this ramp and go flying into the back of an egg truck. And we were having mechanical problems, and the sidecar would run out of gas just before we were hitting this ramp, except that, like, the fifth time that we tried to do it, the guy actually drove us up the ramp. We ran out of gas. We hit the back of the stake bed truck. He flipped over. He was in the car. He flipped over. Luckily, there were pads on the ground, so he didn't get hurt. I slid onto the back of the stake bed truck. Had we hit any lower, I would have been decapitated. So I would say that was the most dangerous stunt.
That's called 1941.
1941. It was Steven Spielberg's. I guess it did make money, but they always refer to it as like his worst bomb movie.
You know what it is about 1941, Leslie? I personally love that movie. I think it's an acquired taste. It's one of those things where it's got dry humor, and either you like it or you don't. Now, I happen to have liked it, but there's a lot of people that don't. It's not a comedy like you know, Last National Lampoon's Vacation or something like that. It's a different type of a comedy. But
the thing that I felt was wrong with the movie is he had maybe one or too many storylines. You know, if he had just stuck to maybe two or three, you know, a main plot and maybe one or two subplots, I think it would have been easier to follow the movie. You know, he had Slim Pickens, he had the family that lived near the ocean, he had the guy that wanted to make it with the girl up in the plane. I felt like there was too many stories going on. But I enjoyed that story. Or I enjoyed the movie. I also did the Jap Trap, if you remember, when Wendy Jo Sperber and Nancy Allen went onto that rug. There was a hat, her hat was on the rug. That was me. So, anyways, I would say not necessarily funny, but fun was the fight in Day of Honor, because at that time Roxanne Dawson was pregnant and they wouldn't let her do even close-up stunts or close-up sort of doing stunts. So actually, Tom Morgan and I did the fight completely ourselves. and it was just so much fun doing that fight. So I would say that was my favorite stunt.
Yeah. Is that the one with the barge?
I'm sorry?
Was that the one with the barge?
No. This is where she had to release the core, and then she and Tom were floating out in space.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, so at the very beginning of that episode, it was a Klingon ritual, you know, it's like, you must eat the heart of the Targ or something like that, and now you have to drink this blood wine, and then she's supposed to fight the Klingon. But, it's called a Texas switch, is that Tom and I did the fight completely, but the cameraman had what you call as a steady cam. So the camera was very movable. I mean, it was attached to the cameraman. So when I knocked the Klingon to the ground, the camera focuses on him. I step out of frame. Roxanne steps into frame. The guy with the camera swings the camera back towards now Roxanne. And Roxanne says, you know, I've decided I'm not going to do this, or some line like that. I guess another thing, I'll call it a great honor, is also Nightmare on Elm Street, where I got to play my own character. And Wes Craven actually gave me double credit at the end of the movie. I'm listed as the hall guard, and I'm also listed under stunts. And back in that time period, stunt people didn't even get credits at the end of the movie. It was hard enough to get stunt credits, and here Wes Craven gave me two credits at the end of the movie.
That was a good scene in Nightmare on Elm Street too. That's one of my favorite scenes that you're in, by the way.
It is so amazing that I think I timed it. I think the whole scene is like 18 seconds long, and when I do horror conventions, people will come up to me and they'll say either, where's your pass, screw your pass, hey Nancy, no running in the hallway. It's just 18 seconds of those three lines are like one of the most memorable lines from original Nightmare.
It's a classic movie and a classic line, so that's awesome. Brendan, make sure that you go to our Facebook page and go to Trek Talking and Beyond on Facebook and message me with your address and so that Leslie can get an autographed picture sent out to you.
Okay.
Do you want to – are you like B'Elanna Torres or Freddy Krueger? What would you be interested in?
B'Elanna Torres.
Excellent.
Will do.
Tread Talking, you said?
Thank you very much for calling the show, and thanks for listening.
Okay. Thank you.
Have a good
night.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye.
So that's awesome. So before we go any further, though, I just want to get a little bit of house cleaning out of the way before we have to take our first break. I just wanted to mention everybody that Stunt Trek, Trek Talking, and Comic Corner, three podcasts that I do all three of every month. Comic Corner is only once a month, but Stunt Trek and Trek Talking are every week. Those shows aren't free. We have to pay. Well, we have to pay for the airtime, pay for the phone line. They cost money to produce. None of us get paid to do any of these podcasts. God, if I was getting paid to do podcasts, I could retire. I do like almost 18 of them a month. So no one's getting paid here. No one's getting rich. But if you're a fan of any of the shows that I mentioned, you can go to patreon.com/trektalking and you can support us by becoming a patron. We have several different tiers there. I'm sure there's something there that fits into your into your budget. And you can become a patron, and you can come on the show and talk with us live. There's a lot of different perks that go with each one of them. And once we hit 10 patrons, I have an autographed picture of Lieutenant Arium from Star Trek Discovery that one of our lucky patrons is going to win. Could be you, but not if you're not a patron. So please consider going to patreon.com/trektalk and becoming a patron and becoming part of our global Star Trek family, which it truly is. We're going to take a quick, very quick commercial break here. Don't touch your dial. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back with V. Leslie Hoffman after this brief station identification.
Hi, this is Sub-Commander Charles from Trek Talking, here to invite you to join us for the best science fiction-themed podcast on the Internet. Our elite team of Trek-sperts are here to discuss Star Trek and related science fiction content. And we want to hear from you. Dial 646-668-2433 Thursday nights from 4:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Coast Time, and we'll get you on the air to share your opinion. Or you can also find us on Facebook. We have faith that you will call.
And we're back. So we're going to be talking about conventions. And Leslie's attended quite a few. Let's start off with conventions, Leslie, just as a fan, just like Charles and I, where you just go and you hang out as a fan. What's the first convention that you attended as a fan?
The first convention that I attended as a fan was in 1973, and it was in New York City. Drove down to New York City, and I got to meet George Takei, and boy, like I say, we're talking about 1973. I posted a picture of me with George on a couple of pages that so you can see how young I was. But it was the most exciting thing in the world to be with other Star Trek fans, and then also I entered a trivia contest, and I came in third. The little girl from Saranac Lake came in third on you know, I don't know how many fans were at this convention. It was packed.
That would have been the first Star Trek convention that they had down in New York City. From what I've heard, there was upwards of 6,000 fans that attended that one.
Well, I don't know. I've talked to Richard Arnold, and I'm not sure if he's saying that there was one in 72. So I'm not sure if I was at the first Star Trek convention or possibly the second. I've never really been able to confirm that.
That's pretty cool. And
yeah.
Leslie, what...
And then, and
what,
then there's
what
been
would you say
other
is the
conventions.
Big,
Oops, say
what
that
would
again?
You say is the biggest difference between the first conventions that you went to in 73 in New York City and to some of the later ones that you've attended? Have they changed over the years?
That's an interesting question. I think you got to realize that in 73, all you had was the original Star Trek. So the excitement over this one Star Trek series was just so amazing. You know, nowadays you have people who say, I love Deep Space Nine, but I hate Voyager. I love Enterprise, but I hate Next Generation. I mean, So there isn't that absolute focus on the original series or on the original Star Trek as back then as there is today. And I
also
don't
didn't
necessarily
have social media.
Remember. Right. Oh yeah. Right. I don't think no internet, no Facebook. 73. People didn't have personal computers. So that maybe even more so that, I mean, with no social media, I mean, to have if you're saying 6,000 people showed up in New York, I mean, that was just hearsay, and people just loved Star Trek so much. They came and gathered because this was the only place that we could all meet each other.
And you know what, Leslie, as a fan and a convention promoter myself, back in the early 90s, that was the exact reason why I dipped my toes into Star Trek fandom as a convention promoter, is because I wanted to give Star Trek fans, friends of mine, because the fan community back then, as you said, it wasn't quite as splintered as it is today. You still had your I Hate TOS, I Hate TNG crew, but for the most part, you know, you either liked Star Trek or you didn't. And have a convention where we could all come together and hang out and celebrate and enjoy this thing that we love was so special back then. And even for me, in the early 90s, we're talking 91, we still didn't have social media. We barely had the internet. We used to have Genie, which was all DOS-driven. So it wasn't even in the 90s like it is today. In fact, when we had our Star Trek segment on our panel discussion, the local TV station gave us some advanced trailers for next week's episodes and movie trailers for Star Trek VI, which hadn't been shown yet. And we actually had to go and rent a giant video projector to show these clips, because it wasn't like it is today where you just put it on your computer. We didn't have that. We had to go get a big video projector, and we had to have Rent-A-Center deliver it and set it all up. It was a big ordeal just to show a three-minute video clip. But when we showed that three-minute video clip, it was the first trailer for Star Trek VI, and the place went wild. They went crazy. We had to play it three or four times. People loved it so much. And, in fact, Mark Leonard, who was briefly in that trailer, was one of our guest stars. So Mark Leonard came out and started talking to everybody. The excitement for Star Trek VI was just out of this world, the excitement for that movie. And we got to ride on that, and it was something special. Those are memories I'll never, ever forget. But unfortunately, I think memories like that are gone forever, because with today's, you know, multimedia, as soon as they put out any information about anything, everybody knows it. Before you'll never have an opportunity to be in a whole room with 600 Star Trek fans and be the first ones to see the new trailer for Star Trek VI, because it'll be on the internet in 5 minutes, and then the whole world will see it.
Those
were the special
thing,
days that I miss.
The other thing, and again, I really don't remember, is that obviously prices have gone up, you know, for a one-day pass and all weekend pass or whatever. I mean, obviously, as a teenager, I was able to afford to go to New York City and go to the Star Trek convention. You know, I really don't know how much people are charging, let's say, for a full weekend pass for Star Trek. And then on top of it, you got the photo ops, and on top of that, you have the autographed pictures, and it could be very expensive.
I can throw I can throw a comment on that one. Retail for non-assigned seating for Star Trek Las Vegas runs 70 to 80 a day. And for a weekend pass, Thursday through Sunday is over 300. That's just for the non-assigned seating. For assigned seating, you get some of these high-end packages, and those things are running $1,000+ a weekend. And those are ones that get the autograph packages and some of the seating and some of the specialty areas. Nice, but I don't want to be that close to stage and spend that kind of money.
Well, and for people coming into Las Vegas, they'd have to pay for a room, I'm assuming.
Yep.
I'm assuming that the weekend pass does not include the room.
Nope. That's just
or
that's
the airfare or the...
only.
Yeah.
Yeah. To put that in perspective, a lot of fans don't understand or don't know how a Star Trek convention works. Now, what I'm going to tell you is from the 90s, a long time ago. Things have changed a little bit since then, but I actually had fans. It was so long ago that my phone number, if you find one of the old flyers or one of the old TV spots, you'll see a phone number on there. That was my home phone number. And I had an answer machine with a tape that would play. And when you called, you heard the tape, and it told you what to do, where to mail your check for your tickets, what tickets were available, who was going to be there, where and when it was. It was about a five-minute tape message. And when you called my phone number at my house, you would hear that message. And that was the only way we could do it back in the 90s. We didn't have digital voicemail like today. So when you called, you got my house. If I was there, I would answer the phone, and you could talk to me in person. And that's how we did it. But the way conventions ran back then, I would call up Marina Sirtis's agent. I'm just using her as an example. And her agent would say, she's $6,000 a day. Okay, I just want her for Saturday, $6,000. I'd have to send a certified check to them by such and such a date. Her manager would send me a list of demands, which would include a limousine to and from the airport, a bottle of Evian water, chocolate truffles, champagne in the room, blah, 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 two round-trip airfare tickets because she didn't want somebody sitting next to her on the plane. All these demands on top of the price you had to pay her. Then you go to your second guest, whoever that might be, Mark Leonard or Jonathan Frakes, and then you'd get the same thing. So you'd have to lay out all that money. Then you have to go rent your hotel, and you have to pay your hotel for the rental of the ballroom space. Then if your local TV station is going to give you some stuff to play, some VHS tapes, now you have to go and call Rent-A-Center and get a video projector there and set up because that technology didn't exist back then. And then you have to pay for your flyers and pay for your TV advertising. So by the time you add that all up, you're laying out $25,000 or $30,000 for a convention. Then you turn around and sell your dealer's tables to your dealers, say $150 a table or whatever it is, and hope you can recoup some of that money. And then whatever's left over, which isn't much, is yours. And unfortunately back then, there were no photo ops and there were no autograph sessions. Because everyone that bought a ticket at the door got an autograph. It was part of what I negotiated with the stars, with an hour on the autograph line. Some stars were better than others and wouldn't cut the line, and others would. But for the most part, Marina Sirtis would sign autographs for every single person in the line. So everyone that came was guaranteed an autograph. Door, the ticket price to get in, I think it was like $25 for the weekend, and that was it. Today, things are a lot different, a lot different. You're going to pay more than $25 at the door.
Right.
And your $25 at the door isn't going to include an autograph. It isn't going to include half the stuff that I included in my price because everyone's got their handout. I think that Star Trek, well, let me rephrase that. Not Star Trek in particular, multimedia conventions, Comic-Cons. I think they've taken the Star Trek mold and they've tortured it and twisted it and perverted it into a giant money grabbing thing. And so that, you know, every person wants their money. You know, you want an autograph, you're going to pay. You want a picture, you're going to pay. You want to sit in the front row, you're going to pay. You want to go to a panel, you're going to pay. And everything it costs you on top of your price at the door. So they're a little, what is it like
well,
in Las Vegas, Charles? Is it the same way?
Yes. In fact, I've heard the autograph pictures right now have to be purchased from creation. So it's adding a charge on top of the gifts. Now, there are two ways of getting autographs. Depends on who it is. Some people will sign autographs at their – some will rent a table out. And you can go sign at their table. And you can catch them multiple times throughout the weekend. That's how I see J.K. Woodard. He's usually connected to a table somewhere. But then you've got the bigger people who then don't through the table, they have an autograph session and a picture session. And those autograph sessions get expensive. I don't do too many. I have only done once an autograph line, and then I've done a couple in the dealer's room. But those are long lines, and you have to pre-purchase tickets, stand in long lines waiting. For me, most of what I do is the nice thing in the convention is it includes three different panel rooms. One's a CBS studio. It's usually minor. A second studio, which has a small studio with small panels, which includes IDW, so I have to stop and make sure I get to those. Then we've got the big room where the major stars go. And I don't remember exact number, but I know that room holds a few thousand people. I know the fact that the assigned seating goes from A to Z, and I sit in the one of the last two sections after A to Z. Gives you an idea how big that room is. The nice thing I run into is I've got a good zoom lens on my camera. From the back area, I can still get a great shot of the stage, and then I can also get a great shot from one of the big screen TVs that display what's going on the stage. So that helps in making more than eight. Plus
for me, Charles, being an old fan, I went to conventions when they were Star Trek conventions and not Comic-Con.
Oh, yeah, so did I.
And, you know, when we went to a convention, they never charged extra for panels.
Yeah.
And the last convention I went to, the Next Generation crew was there, and I had paid to get into the convention, and then you had to pay an extra $25 to go to the Star Trek The Next Generation panel, and I that infuriated me. I was like, wait a second. Paid to get in the door. Every single panel that's here is included in your admission price, but now because I'm a Star Trek fan, I need to pay extra to go to a Star Trek panel? Did they do that at Vegas too?
Yes and no. No, because they'll all show up the regular panel events. There was one year a special panel, and then other years it's a concert. It's a pop concert. But one year we did not have this pop concert. We did have a panel that we did pay extra for. But the unique thing in that one is it was an evening event after the main convention. And they had almost the entire regular crew of Next Generation show up that evening. So it was an extra special event because in the regular panel, you might have two or three people on stage at one time. In that specific panel, everybody was on stage the entire time. In fact, they didn't even have a moderator. They moderated the entire thing themselves. That was worthy of paying the extra for. But most of the time, the concerts are worth it, panel. It's a special privilege, and there's a reason why it costs that much to get that many people on stage at one time. But for most of the panels, no, they don't charge for the panels.
See, have to wonder,
where
does all this money go to? Who's making all this money?
Creation. A lot of it's going to pay for the hotel, the convention space. But if you want an example of a panel that everybody's familiar with, I was sitting in the main studio listening to I can't think of it. Captain Kirk. Listening to him speak. And there had been an announcement of, hey, you want to stick around after he leaves the stage. Shatner. You want to be in the room when Shatner's done. And, okay, I'll sit around. I'm going to watch this. All of a sudden, the head of CBS walks on stage and says, I've got this big announcement, but I don't think I'm big enough to make it. Let me bring on my friend to discuss it. Oh, let's introduce Patrick Stewart. And that was the announcement for the new show he's doing.
Awesome.
So sometimes, yeah, he said there's like, oh, what am I seeing when I'm here? Yet I'm right there in the middle of the audience who's sitting there getting this breaking announcement that nobody knows about, didn't get leaked out, and we're the first ones to know. So sometimes it is fun and worthy to be able to catch some of this stuff.
So we have to take another quick station identification break. Don't touch a dial. Don't go anywhere. When we come back, we're going to talk with the Leslie Hoffman about her experiences from the other side of the table. You're going to want to stick around and listen to this. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jamie from Trek Talking, here to invite you to join us for the best sci-fi themed podcast. Our elite team of Trek-sperts are here to discuss Star Trek and sci-fi themed content. Call 646-668-2433 Thursday nights from 7:30 to 9:30 p.m. Eastern Coast Time. We can't wait to hear from you. Live long and prosper.
So we're back. So Leslie, we've been talking about our experiences
yes.
in front of the table, but what are some of the things you can tell us about that happens on the other side of the table that Charles and I wouldn't necessarily see?
Well, one of the first shows that I was able to actually was booking myself and a couple of their stunt people, Tom Morga and Brian Williams, who is Data's double. Tom Morga's doubled and been almost every alien in the world. I was able to sell us as a stunt team to this convention. And the first show that we did, it was just Brian and myself, and we went out to do the show, and we were just about to be announced to go on stage, and there was a bomb scare, and they had to evacuate the hotel. And the showrunner, I mean, he was depressed. He's what am I going to do? You know, how long is this going to be? And I went up to him, and I said, well, you know, Brian and I could do the stunt routine outside on the lawn. And he goes, oh, yes, yes, you know. And he makes a quick announcement to the people in the audience, you know, go out to the lawn and we'll set up there and Leslie and Brian will be, you know, doing the stunt show. And it was so while we're fighting with these bat lifts, you can hear helicopters going over our head and fire trucks, you know, with the sirens going, coming to the hotel. Actually, it turned out it was even crazier. I even know the reason why there was the bomb scare was I think there was a senator staying at the hotel or it was a delegation at the hotel. And one senator got this bright idea to send a bunch of clocks to the delegation so they would wake up and you know, make it to the meetings. So this box arrives at the hotel and it's ticking. So that's what the bomb scare was. They got this box that was ticking. They think it's a bomb, and they call, you know, whoever, the fire department, the police department. Yeah, we got this box, and it's ticking. Anyways, That was our first experience with a stunt show. But I say later, either I was going to conventions with either Tom or Brian, or sometimes all three of us would be at a convention doing a stunt show. But what was so much fun was a couple of times J.G. Hertzler and Robert O'Reilly were guests as well. So we put this routine together where I was supposedly the director, and J.G. and Bob would have dialogue, and then they get angry at each other and they're ready to throw punches, and then I'd yell, "Cut, stuntmen," and then Brian and Tom would come in and they would start fighting, and let's say one has gotten the other one to the ground, and I go, "Cut, okay, you know, J.G., Bob, come back in," and dialogue. Well, it finally came to, I guess they were fighting over the woman, which was me, and they were going to, you know, so they were going to do the kiss, and Tom wanted to kiss me, and J.G. beats up Tom, and actually J.G. gave me a big fat kiss. That's one way to get kissed by General Martok. it was a lot of fun. I hope the fans enjoyed it as much as I did. But so the other thing is being on the other side of the table. You know, fans come up and ask you questions and you know, you try your best to answer them. But there was a couple times that, like, Brian had his picture set up and I had my picture set up, and in front of me is this picture of me as a Romulan, and people would, here I'm sitting in front of the picture, but they would turn towards Brian and they'd go, "Is that a picture of you?" In other words, they thought the Romulan picture was Brian instead of me. And, you know, no, I'm just sitting behind this picture because I don't know. There was another time that
I have no idea who those people are.
Right. They aren't connecting the stunt people being dressed up in alien makeup, so they don't know who's in what picture. Another time, a Klingon came up to the table, and he had a batliff that he had made out of probably stainless steel. I mean, it looked like it could have hurt you, and he wanted me to sign it, but, I mean, he's shoving it towards me, points facing towards me, and it's like, whoa, you know, could you just kind of put it on the table, please? No, I signed it, but, you know, I'm used to rubber bat lifts. I'm not used to ones made out of stainless steel.
Now, when you're at the horror conventions, do people ever come up to you with Freddy Krueger claws and stuff like that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they might have the Freddy Krueger claw. They may have an action figure of Freddy Krueger. I think the majority is that they have the original Nightmare on Elm Street poster, which actually I guess they made different variations of posters. Also, they had posters from different countries, so, you know, it wouldn't necessarily be in English. So it was fun. It was fun signing all the posters, and well, I feel like I've signed plates. I've signed everything. I mean, not only horror, you know, you have the Star Trek, so you have action figures, and not that I was an action figure, but, you know, you have action figures, you have Star Trek plates, you have, you have the DVD series. So you know, you could be signing not only just your picture. It could be actually well, like I say, a memorabilia, like I say, DVD, a poster, you know, something like that. I almost feel like someone even created, I want to say it was the Freddy Krueger, that somehow they made a Freddy Krueger doll and had me sign it.
Have you ever been asked to sign a picture that wasn't you?
Not me, but I was at a convention where the person next to me was, and I always get Michael Myers and Jason mixed up for some reason. They had a picture of, it was a picture, see, I'm familiar with the pictures that Tom has. He had this split picture where it really was a picture of Tom standing up, and then there's a picture of him where the mask has been taken off, and you can see it's this actor that was at the convention. And I let Tom know that this guy was selling a picture of Tom, technically, and getting money for it. And it wasn't, you know, like I say, it wasn't this actor. It was definitely the picture of Tom. But no, I don't think I've ever had one where, or if someone brought a picture to me that wasn't me, I think I would tell them first. I mean, I'm trying to remember if it's ever happened. I don't think it has, but if it was the wrong, if it wasn't me, I would definitely let them know. Hey, if they say, well, I still would like you to sign it, you know, I would do it. Oh, and now I'm in the two-book encyclopedia. So I've had Nightmare on Elm Street books that I've signed that I definitely have been interviewed in, and now the last Star Trek encyclopedia, the like I say, this big two-book box set. So I've signed books as well.
Charles, you have that set, don't you?
Yes, I do. That's one of my resources.
What page are you on, Leslie?
Okay, I am not. See, I'm being honest. I am not within the book, but if you look in the appendix or the index or whatever, I think on the second book, you look under Hoffman, you'll see Leslie Hoffman, stunt double Torres, you know, so no, there's no picture of me, but they're definitely, my name is definitely in there.
Oh, that's pretty cool. We'll have to have Charles check that out.
Looking now.
Oh, okay. Yeah, like I said, I don't have my books out right now, so I can't tell you if it's the first book or the second book, but it's definitely at the back where it has like the other cast and crew people listed and a quick detail.
Okay. Back with
did
the
you
cast.
Find?
Leslie Hoffman. Torres stunt double, Day of Honor, and Voyager, Extreme Risk, Voyager, ECT.
Right. Yeah, Michael Acuda was, you know, he wasn't going to have me. He has to do what the publishers want him to do. So he, you know, he's like, you can find Dennis Matalone and Tom Morga in that same, you know, alphabetically in that same area, and it's not going to list that every show that Dennis did or that Tom did or that I did, but I feel greatly honored that Michael did include me.
But to sit there and include not just people who showed up as guest stars and regulars, but people that actually worked the show as even stunt people. That's appreciative that everybody's recognized. That's one of the reasons I love those books. They are so detailed.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Michael's put hours and hours into, well, you know, he did the first, in fact, that's a good question. Is this now like about the fourth encyclopedia he's done?
I'm not even sure myself.
Yeah, no, he's been doing this for years.
There was a blue-covered one, the chronology, that was just a single issue. There might have been one before that was TOS, TAS, TNG, and DS9. Yeah, I think this might be the third or fourth one.
I think there even was a TOS edition.
There's been quite a few.
But another thing about conventions is that, you know, it might be a sci-fi convention or a Star Trek convention, but I do bring pictures of Nightmare. Well, when I go to a convention, I do bring both the Star Trek and the Nightmare on Elm Street. And, I mean, it's interesting. There was one convention that I swear I sold more. In other words, it was Star Trek. But I swear that I sold more Nightmare on Elm Street pictures. So you just never know.
Well, I think that Star Trek, when people say Star Trek as a whole, as an entire series of everything encompassing it, is a classic. But you have so many different flavors of the classic. But when you say Nightmare on Elm Street, there's only one Elm Street. And the fact that you were in that very first movie and Freddy Krueger is such a classic horror movie monster that it wouldn't surprise me that more people would recognize you or be interested in Nightmare on Elm Street than they would in Star Trek. That doesn't surprise me because Freddy Krueger is just – he's iconic. And when you say Star Trek, what comes to your mind? It's going to be different for each one of us. Charles might think of TNG. You might think of TOS. I might think of Discovery. Someone else might think of Deep Space Nine. So even though the word Star Trek triggers a response in you, it's a different response. But if I say Freddy Krueger, The Nightmare on Elm Street, there's no – I know exactly what you're talking about. Where's your hall pass?
Right. Well, the other thing is, like I say, you know, when you're an alien and then you're behind the desk, they can't necessarily, well, in other words, I was the Harl Guard. My hair is as long as it was when I was being the Harl Guard. That is not a wig. That is my hair in those ponytails. So maybe it's easier for someone to look at that picture and recognize that it's me. Much older now, but they recognize that it's me. While when they look at a picture of Mila, you know, here I'm a Cardassian. How are you going to see through the makeup and see that I'm the person, you know, underneath all that makeup?
True. That's true, too.
So, the other thing that I want to give kind of a shout out is, well, besides you haven't even begun to talk about the hours and hours that you put in to create a convention. I mean, if you were to put a price on per hour, I mean, it would just be just so outrageous how much time and money, effort you put in to do it. Is that at conventions, you're usually given a volunteer to make sure, you know, you have a bottle of water. Do you need to get up and walk around? Do you want to go to the green room to get something to eat? I'll sit at the table while, you know, you go to the bathroom or, like I say, get something to eat. And the volunteers that I've dealt with have all been so absolutely wonderful. I mean, I don't think a convention could run without the volunteers.
No, it's an honor when you have a convention and you ask somebody, like, you know, will you be interested in taking care of Will Wheaton this weekend? And they agree to do that. it's an honor, and they take it very seriously. And you don't have to pay them; just the fact that they get to hang out with Will Wheaton all weekend is more than enough. And most of the times, you're gonna, unless it's your parents. I had my parents. I asked my parents a simple thing: can you take Walter and get a car at the airport? He wants to go to see Woodstock. And my own parents couldn't even handle that. They botched it all up and had to call me to straighten it out. So, you know, sometimes dealing with your family, you know, you can't count on them. Sorry for another day. But at any rate, we're out of time, Leslie. Can you believe that?
Wow, this hour just went by real fast.
I have a feeling that we could do a whole other show.
Charles.
Great talking to you once
Charles
again.
I just talked to Charles this afternoon. I get to talk to Charles. Well, I talk to Charles tonight. I get to talk to Charles tomorrow. And I get to talk to Charles on Thursday.
Well, okay.
Or
well,
Charles gets to talk to me, one or the other.
If we ever get to meet each other, Charles, you bring that the encyclopedia, and I'll autograph it for you.
Oh, I'd appreciate that.
So this wraps up Stunt Trek Episode 8 with Uncle Jim and the Leslie Hoffman, special guest Charles from Trek Talking and Beyond. We were talking about conventions tonight. I have a feeling we could talk a whole other show about conventions, because I feel there's so much more that we didn't get a chance to touch on, but an hour goes pretty quick. And congratulations to Brendan from Kentucky. He was our first caller, and he'll be receiving an autograph from Leslie herself. So thank you for calling, and congratulations. Make sure you guys tune in tomorrow. Same bat time, same bat channel. Well, I lied. At 7:30, we'll be doing Comic Corner. Charles will be back with me, TJ, Jamie, and Eric, and we'll be talking about Star Trek Transformers issue number 4 and the Q Conflict issue number 1. So you guys want to tune in for that. We don't have anything free or autographed to give away if you give us a call. So just call and say hello, and we'd appreciate it. And of course, Thursday night, don't forget Trek Talking. We're going to be talking about that awesome, incredible episode with the Talosians and Spock and all that great stuff. Talos 4. So you guys want to tune in for that. And if you want to call, 646-668-2433 is a number. Call and tell us what you thought about the Talosians. Did you like them? Did you not like them? What about Vina? Whatever's on your mind, give us a call, 646-668-2433. We'd love to hear from you. The Leslie Hoffman and yours truly, Uncle Jim, will be back with you next Sunday at 7 o'clock for Episode 9 of Stunt Trek. What are we going to talk about next week, Leslie?
Boy,
I haven't even thought about it.
I don't know, maybe different aliens and makeup and things like that.
So there you have it, guys. We'll be talking about aliens and makeup on next week's show. You don't want to miss out on that. And thanks for hanging out with us tonight, Charles. It's great to hear from you.
Oh, and had a ball.
And the pretty lady's telling me that I only have 90 seconds to go, so we have to wrap up the show and say goodnight. Thank you, Leslie, and thank you, Charles, and we'll talk to you guys next week. Bye-bye.
All right.
Bye.
Let's see what's out there. Engage.